This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To, Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you as always for the next hour. You, of course, are tuned in live throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, or you're listening to the free live streaming or the archived podcast of the show on our HRRN website at horseracingradio.net. Well, super excited for today's show. It is Derby week at Churchill Downs, and I get to be sitting in the barn of trainer Greg Foley, who is going to saddle Obesos in the Kentucky Derby on Saturday afternoon. We're going to hear his story here for you on Trainer Talk today. Greg, of course, grew up very close to Churchill Downs in Oldham County, Kentucky, just outside of Louisville. He has saddled more than 1,400 winners in a career which has seen him rack up multiple training titles, including two at Churchill Downs, where he is in the top 10 all-time in wins. It's been one hell of a ride, and the last couple of years have just been sensational. Greg, really appreciate the visit.
Glad to be with you, Mike. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me here in the barn area and sitting here in your office. Just fantastic. I can see all the pictures of some of the top horses you trained on the walls. Champ Ali being prominent, as he should be.
Yeah, Champ was a good one, man. He was a fun ride, for sure.
Yeah, what a ride it's been for you. Take me back to the beginning for a minute. We're going to talk about Obesos and the Kentucky Derby. We'll talk about last year's Derby, too. But take me back to the beginning. Where did the love of horse races begin for you?
Well, it came from working with my father. My father, Dravo Foley, trained. Grew up from a child on up with the horses, and he was always at the track, and just being with him started out probably when I could walk, started walking hots for my father. My sister Vicky the same, and he was racing in River Downs back then, and in Cincinnati, and just was always with him.
Was there ever a point when you were a kid and you said, maybe I'll get out of the horse business or not get into the horse business and do something different?
I don't think there was ever a thought in my head about doing anything else. I went to school and played sports and all that kind of thing, but went to college my first year. I went to Western Kentucky. My mother more or less made me. She wasn't going to leave me alone until I at least tried it. And anyway, she got my grades from there, and she had enough of that, and I was on to the racetrack after that.
Your dad must have been very excited that you wanted to follow in his footsteps.
Oh yeah, he was an excellent horseman. I pride myself taking care of my horses, and it all came from my dad. The horses always came first, and I know he's smiling right now. He'd be tickled to death to see me run a horse in the Derby.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that question. You had your first Derby starter last year with Major Fed.
Yeah,
I can imagine you spent a lot of time thinking about your dad and what he would say if he were here.
Yeah, my mom and dad, they're both gone, but they'd be so proud, I'm sure.
Especially for a Kentucky kid. Let's take it that way for a minute. As a Kentucky kid, to be here saddling a horse in the Kentucky Derby, how cool is that?
Well, even more so, I think. I've been here a long time, and finally got one in there last year. It took me a while to get it done, but we did with Major Fed. And then to come back the next year with that was all I said last year after the race. I said, man, I want to do it again, and lucky enough to come up with this horse, Obesos.
Do you remember what it was like making that walkover for the first time last year? I know you didn't have fans, and you were kind of gypped out of that.
Yeah.
But the experience had to be very special.
It was special. I was excited, of course, for the horse and liked my horse last year. But the walkover was, of course, we were very excited. And I had my two sons with me, wife, which my two boys are working with me also, Travis and Alex now, and just to have everybody together with me made it that much better.
You know, I've actually had trainers, not many, but I've had some trainers tell me, Kentucky Derby, it's just another horse race. It's not another horse race, is it?
You had trainers that ran horses that said it's just another horse race?
How could they ever do that,
right? I don't know how that could come out of their mouth. I think they'd be lying to say that. There's no other horse race. It's no question the biggest horse race ever.
Was this something that your dad had always aspired to when he was trained? Sure. Did he say, man, I want that Derby horse?
Oh, yeah. And he always said he'd get one, you know, and he had a lot of good horses, but he never made it to the Derby.
What is it about the Derby? Why is it so hard to even get a horse here?
He did, back up just a second, he did raise a horse. He bred and raised horses also, my dad. He raised a horse called Taylor Special.
Oh, yeah.
That we wound up selling as a two-year-old to Bill Mott, owner of his, Mr. Lucas, who did run in the Derby. Very, really good racehorse. He won the Bluegrass, and he won a lot of race after. He didn't run very good in the Derby. But anyway, my dad did. He raised that horse, bred and raised him.
He had to be very proud.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I say that a lot. Just to get a horse to any race is an accomplishment. To get him into a race like the Kentucky Derby, it's like winning the lottery.
It is. You know, there's just so many horses, and there's 20 of them to get to start Saturday. To have one good enough and qualify and be good enough to take over and run, it's just, like you said, like hitting the lottery. It really is.
What are some of the things that your dad taught you that you're still using with your operation today?
Well, like I think I said it before, he just the horse comes first. Just take care of your horse; they'll you know take care of you. And is the main thing: feed them good and have good help and as far as their daily care and that, and just pay attention to the you know he was a detail man to the little things and just keep your horse eating good, doing good, and run them where they belong. And then you'd be all right.
You now have the opportunity to go down this road and be part of this experience with your son. How cool is that?
Like I said, walking over to the Derby with both of them,
yeah.
Travis and Alex. And I never envisioned them being around the racetrack. They were always, you know, in school playing sports. They were really good high school athletes, both of them. Went to college, both got degrees. And, you know, I just figured they'd would do something else. Kind of didn't steer them away, but in a way did. It's just, you know, it's a tough business. It's very competitive, and it's not an easy game. But they both kind of found their way back over here, and I said, you know, if that's what you want to do, you know, jump, just come on. You know, you're welcome to come in here with me, and it's worked out good.
Yeah, do you think someday they go out and they train on their own?
I could see it. I mean, Travis and Travis is the oldest. He's been doing it a lot longer now here with me than Alex, but he's come a long way. He's been, I guess, about 10 years now, and he does a lot of my promoting the stable and the emails and that kind of stuff that I've got a flip phone, by the way.
You and Nick Zito.
Yeah, that'll tell you about mine, but he's you know talking to the owners and promoting the stable, bringing new people in. He's done a heck of a job here, you know, especially the last few years. I think it's been a big help in the growth of the stable.
Yeah, you find it's important to have somebody that is savvy with technology and social media and those types of things
with all the new stuff coming. You know, there's something new coming out every day now. And Alex the same. He's he's jumping in I think they're going to do fine.
Those kinds of things have changed when it comes to training horses in terms of the promotion of the stable and how you get your name out and attracting clients. But training a racehorse there's still only one way to train a racehorse, right?
Well, that's where I come in, I think, but they're both picking up a lot, just watching and learning about they're here every day, you know, watching the care of the horses and they've learned a lot, you know, but again, yeah, you, I mean, there's a, far as attracting clients and all that, it's just like coaching basketball, football, anything else. You got to win races or win ball games, or you're not going to be there very long. And it's same with training racehorse. They got to run good for you pretty regular.
Talking with trainer Greg Foley here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I worked with my dad for many, many years before I moved to Kentucky. He had a convenience store in Massachusetts. We worked side by side. There were times when, I was the kid. I had these fresh ideas. I wanted to, and he had the experience. And I wish I had listened to him more often.
But, I thought you were going to say something. But, yeah, I mean, my two are the same. And, a lot of times I don't like their ideas or whatever. I'm a little hard-headed anyway. But, there's been some little blow-ups for sure. But I've had them storm out of here a few times. But they've always come back, so. We get over it and go on.
Yeah, I remember the last blow up that I had with my dad is the reason I moved to Kentucky. It worked out wonderfully for both of us. We were never closer than after I moved to Kentucky, and it worked out for the best. Yeah. But there were times when it was tense. It's tough to work with family sometimes. Yeah.
Well, it is, And I was the same with my dad. I could have choked him sometimes, So. But, like you said, as I'd get back and think about it, most of the time he's probably right. Not every time, but, but again, he's old school. And at the time I was, coming in and had maybe some newer ideas, this and that. And
yeah,
it's hard to change the old ways.
You ever think about sending him over to Aunt Vicky?
Well, Vicky's she's a big part of the stable also. We actually are kind of molded in together. She's right next door to me, and she's got Hog Creek Hustle, who's a nice horse, and a couple of young horses. But we're kind of blending in together, really. It's all pretty much one outfit. And Vicky's an excellent horsewoman and horseman, woman, whatever you want to call it. But she does a great job, knows about a racehorse, and just part of the family.
Did she spend time working with your dad too?
Very much so.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So you both have that same philosophy. The horse actually comes first, and
yeah, I got three sisters, and they all worked with the horses growing up. Again, we'd be at the track when we were kids. Vicky's the oldest. I was a year younger, and I've got a sister, Sharon, and Lisa, younger. But they walked horses, and they fell right into the routine also.
I can remember when Hog Creek Hustle won that grade one. Was it 2 years ago at Belmont? We were there.
Belmont Park.
Yeah, sure I bet did. On him that three. Day. So I was never a bigger fan of Vicky Foley than that one moment right there when he came storming home.
Sure did. He's been a fun horse. He's she's got him in the grade one Saturday over here. I've got a horse in there also. I'm going to be a long shot. A little horse called Bango.
Yep.
He got beat two lengths in the graded stakes at Keeneland over there in Hog Creek. That was his first start. He was in the same race. I think he needed that race pretty good over there. He flattened up and I don't know, got beat 7-8 lengths. But they ought to run pretty good over here Saturday.
If I'm not mistaken, that race when he won the Woody Stevens at Belmont, wasn't there an inquiry that...
There was.
Yeah, the numbers started flashing on the board, right?
Corey Lannery, who's ridden him a lot of times... he hit him right hand and he ducked in, and they've taken horses down for lesser things that day. I cringed when I saw the head on. I mean, it wasn't terrible, but it was bad enough. The best thing about it, the horse was dead stopping horse. He was done. He was going backwards. The horse that he bothered that day, but he did come over on that horse but anyway, they had to sweat that out but they left him up, and it was a great win for the horse and Vicky and the owners, Patty Tipton and their ownership.
Hard enough to win a grade one, but to have to sweat it out like that? Come on, that's excruciating.
That would have been killer. I was sweating for them.
You were here, right?
I was here at Churchill. I was actually had just run a horse, and I was nervous. I went up the escalator, and my boots were all muddy, and the shoe shine, man, you want to... straighten those boots up. I said, yeah, man, hit them there. And I'd kind of forgotten about the time of her race running. And there was a TV. I could see it across. And that race, they actually just came out of the gate, and I saw her colors. Anyway, I'm watching that race in the shoe shine stand there, and I jumped out of that thing, running down and hollering and screaming for her. But yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. What a great moment that was. I mentioned the name Champ Ali, and we started talking about him a little bit at the beginning of the interview here, beginning of the show. But I'm looking around. I'm seeing Champ Ali in the winner's circle here and in the winner's circle there, and I see him on the cover of the Daily Racing Form. He was such an important horse for you. Tell me more about Champ Ali.
Champ was just, he was just a dead runner, man. I bought him as a yearling, September yearling sale at Keeneland. Gave a lot of money for him, for me, especially at that time. I think I gave $75,000 for him. He was by Glitterman, was his daddy, and just a real pretty yearling. And anyway, brought him in here and got him started as a two-year-old and ran his first, broke his maiden at Ellis first time out. One easy. Trained like, nice, really nice colt. Loved him the whole time. Beautiful horse. Wasn't a great big horse, but it was put together really nice. Had a big old rear end shoulder on him. And he just went from there. He just he ran every time you took him over there. Won his next start at Keeneland, a lounge race. Pat Day rode him that day, and then he won the 2-year-old race here.
Yeah, the Iroquois, right?
Was that the one? I think it was the Iroquois.
Yeah,
in the fall,
right?
He won that race, and he was 3-for-3. And then we ran him in a jockey club two turns the first time, and he ran fourth, I think, in that. And I was staying at Turfway at the time. In the winter, I was staying at home, stabling here, and I was running all my horses at Turfway, and we'd stable over trackside in the winter when you had to leave Churchill to get out of here. But I'd stable over there and run at Turfway all winter, and we won a bunch of races there for several years. And he went through all the Turfway preps and that, won them all, and into the Lane's End, and wound up getting beat in the Lane's End. Kind of had a bad trip that day and ran third. And, we kind of had Kentucky Derby on our mind with him. But, the back of my mind, I knew he didn't really probably want to go that far. And the Derby come up here, and, of course, we skipped that. I talked my guys out of that. The owners, it was a tough deal, too, because they wanted to run him.
Yeah.
And anyway, they did skip it, and I said, well, let's do this. Let's skip that, and let's try him in a Preakness. And that was the plan. And that week before the Preakness, we had plans to go, the whole deal. He colicked on me bad. I mean, really bad. It was scary. A whole day we went with that Doc Hardhill here and Rick Pelfrey, but he was a younger vet then. And we were battling with him all day, and we kept him here without Doc actually laid him down on the ground, just knocked him out, and wound up getting him taken care of, where that bellyache finally went away on him. But I just knew I thought he was going to die that day. I really did. But anyway, he snapped out of that, and I'm rattling on here. But snapped out of that, and
he was like one of your children, right? It's easy to do.
That horse was so good. Loved him. But he snapped out of that and got over it, and we, had to let him recuperate from that, which he did pretty quickly. And stake here at Churchill came up, the Aristides maybe, and he just galloped in that race, and we went on. And he won so many good races. He won the Smile Sprint. I think that's the picture. That was $500,000.
Yeah.
There at Calder when they ran that. Jerry Bailey rode him that day down there. That was a fun day. And then his next biggest win after that, he won the Phoenix over at Keeneland.
Yep.
And
took you to the Breeders'
Cup. Took us to the Breeders' Cup there in Texas. And we drew the one hole there, and he got away a step slow, got squeezed back. You can watch the rerun of that race. Rafael Bejarano actually won the Phoenix on him and rode him in the Breeders' Cup. And he got squeezed back pretty far and came running. He always laid up pretty close in the race, good stalking horse. And I really think he should have won the race. And that race was just loaded with good horses also. Now I'm having trouble telling you the names of all of them.
Well, I mean,
it's champions. Spikestown. There was three or four. It was just an amazing race. You go back and look it up, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I can't remember their names all right now, but it was an unbelievable race. That race was full of good horses.
You mentioned Rafael Bejarano. I can remember when he first burst onto the scene. You had such a major role in his success. What a team the two of you were.
We had a lot of fun. I'll tell you, he first came here, he couldn't speak a lick of English. Couldn't speak. Julio Espinoza had his book, and he would walk around and communicate between the two of you or whatever. But I was he came, and I was running the horses at Turfway in wintertime, and I saw him ride a time or two, and I said, oh, my God, this kid's unreal. And anyway, he rode all the horses for me. He'd come to paddock. It'd be about 20 degrees outside. You'd see all these other little jocks standing over there shivering. This dude would come out doing jumping jacks, flexing his legs back. Me ready, me ready. We win. I said, let's go. He was, he'd tell you. Ralph, he's a class act, and he's the same today as he was then. He's of course, went and won all kinds of races everywhere. He left here, went to California. He was a man out there for a long time.
He was.
He's come back here, and he's came from nothing. He really did in Peru. He was told me stories. His home, the dirt floor, and he's a multimillionaire now. He's really invested well, and really good. He's a first-class act, him.
I can remember when I had first started on radio, I was working in the racing office at Keeneland. I met a gentleman who was doing a show out there. That's how I got into radio. He had me on. I was working with Barb Borden in Horse ID.
Oh, Barb. And, where are you? I didn't remember.
Yeah, I was her assistant in Horse ID for a couple of years. And there was a gentleman doing a show. He said, hey, do you want to come on my show and talk about what you do? And I said, okay. Well, that's how I got introduced to radio, and then everything kind of fell from there.
Right.
But I remember Rafael Bejarano, when he just started to get better with his English, we did an interview, and he never forgot that interview. And I saw him in California when we were there for Breeders' Cup a couple of years ago, and it was like we didn't miss a beat. You know, he's just such a class act, and I love the kid.
You gotta love him. You really do.
Yeah,
his English. I mean, he went to school and went to classes to learn English, and he speaks perfect English now.
Yeah. Yep, yeah. Smart kid. Talking with Greg Foley here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Let's fast forward to the Kentucky Derby coming up on Saturday. Obesos, tell me a little bit more about him.
He's coming into the race great. We just took him over to paddock. We just got back to the barn here with him when you walked up. And he looks good. His color's great. Weight. We're good to go. We're ready to go.
He's been knocking on the door with some pretty good competition. Hasn't quite gotten there yet this year. What's the key to him being able to turn the tables on everybody and find yourself draped in roses? Well, him draped in roses, but you hoisting the trophy.
Well, he's just got to keep improving, and he has. He's improved every race his horse has run, from his first maiden race here at Churchill to his maiden race at Fairgrounds, the non-two. He's done everything right, really. We jumped him, we took a big plunge with him from winning a non-horse, a two sprint race at the Fairgrounds. The Risen Star came up, and the horse doing good. There's really nowhere else to run him. Kind of talked about it, and let's take a shot, see if he wants to run around two turns or not. Didn't really know the way he came from way back in these sprints and galloping out. You thought he should. And anyway, we ran him in the Risen Star, and he ran a good fourth. Looked like he was at the eighth pole, like he maybe could get there. He, didn't quit, but just kind of leveled out and hung. But taking up for him, again, that was his first start going long. He was a little keen. He was closer up in the race, I think, took away from his kick and that. But again, ran a good race. And that led you up to the Louisiana Derby. Back of my mind, he flattens out. I don't know if he wants to go that far or not. That's when actually Marcelino Pedroza came in the picture in the Risen Star. We had to come with a Brian Hernandez won broke his maiden, and the nine was a two. Then the Risen Star came up, and he rode another horse instead of ours.
Yeah.
So anyway, Pedroza rode in the Risen Star, and he loved the race. He said, this horse will improve off that. You know, he's talking to me about running the Louisiana Derby. I don't know if I want to do that or not. And anyway, we breeze him. He breezes like he breezed over here the other day. And he said, great. He said, this horse, he'll run long. Don't worry about it. He said, I don't know how he won going short. It's really what he said. And anyway, we talked it over and went to the Louisiana Derby. And he ran a tremendous race. He came from last over a speed-favoring racetrack. You know, another jumpy second. He gets beat a lip for a second that wound up costing us the points. We kind of had to fret over points for a while to get in the race. But anyway, and gallops out in front of Hot Rod Charlie, who was the winner. He's a very good racehorse. There are a lot of people like him Saturday. But this horse of mine galloped out in front of him by the time they got to the first turn, they're galloping out. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, see what happens. I know a lot of people, when they think about winning the Kentucky Derby, they don't even want to go there in their mind because it's such a powerful experience. And I've talked to trainers and jockeys that have won it, and they all say the same thing. Yeah. It's just there's no other feeling like it. Do you talk with your sons and your family about it, or is it something that, hey, we don't want to jinx ourselves, we don't even want to talk about it?
Oh, they just, you know, how good that would be. Both of my boys and the wife, you know, they're all excited. They were excited last year and again this year, you know. But I actually asked Pat Day, I've asked him a couple of times. I said, you know, you missed the Derby a few times. You should have won a couple in that before you did. Probably, but finally with Little E.T. you won it. How good was that? He said you can't even explain it, Greg. You know Pat's very religious man and all that, but he not even talking about that, but he said it was like I left my body almost, you know. It was like an out of body experience. He's like, you were just floating looking at everything. He said it's just he said the only way you can describe it. All the races he's won every race imaginable other than the Derby up to then, and he said it wasn't even close.
Wow. Well, let's hope that you and your family all get to experience that feeling together.
I hope so,
on
too.
Saturday, and good luck, Greg. Really appreciate you taking time to do the show with me, and all the best coming up on Saturday and beyond, too, with all your horses. Keep it rolling.
Thank you much, man. Appreciate it.
All right, that's Greg Foley on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Big day for him and for his family coming up on Saturday. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studios, and to Greg Foley, my special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Thanks for listening. Back next week with an all-new edition here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Fasig Tipton is bringing the heat to Miami with the Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale of selected two-year-olds in training. The nation's premier two-year-olds in training sale will be held on March 31st after the Florida Derby over Gulfstream Park's dirt racetrack. The sale has a history of producing the sport's very best horses, including last year's Grade 1 Arkansas Derby winner Nadal, as well as top horses Bellafina, Dona Veloce, Yapin, and Share the Ride. You will find no higher concentration of quality in any two-year-old sale in 2021. The Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale, March 31st at Gulfstream Park. Where will you be?